Live from the In the Room studios located in the NetCarrier and Cloud, this is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
The following program is brought to you in part by NetCarrier. For all of your business communications needs, take your business into the NCloud at netcarrier.com. The opinions and information expressed on other VOC Nation Radio Network programming may or may not reflect the opinions of the staff or management of NetCarrier. Sit back, relax, and enjoy insight and analysis of the business world. This is Take Charge Tuesday, presented by NetCarrier in the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Business owners, prepare to take charge. Get the latest trends in business and technology every Tuesday at 12 p.m. Eastern, presented by NetCarrier. Tweet your business questions in advance at NetCarrier using the hashtag TakeChargeTuesday. Or call live toll-free at 855-VOC-RADIO.
Live on VOCNation.com. We're here until 1 o'clock talking today about customer retention, and there's a lot of things that go into customer retention. Collections, certainly one of them. Difficult customers, certainly another thing. But retention of customers long after contracts expire, and that's about customer relationships, I think, more than anything else. But we're here today. We have the usual panel of Al Gordon, and Chad Muckenfuss, Laura Rinker, all from NetCarrier, and Take Charge Tuesday comes to you live from the In the Room studios located inside the NetCarrier NCloud. You can take your business into the NCloud by going to netcarrier.com. I'm the voice of choice, if I didn't say that already.
Hi.
855-VOC Radio is the toll-free number if you want to get to the show, 855-862-7234. We'll be talking to Larry Steller today from Quality Asset Recovery about how to best manage getting your money from customers. So that's all part of the retention process and keeping customers happy. So we'll talk to Larry in just a little bit. But Alan Gordon, as you tackle that pudding in front of you, how do you tackle keeping customers happy long after their contract expires? How do you keep a customer outside of just the contractual bounds that they're obligated to act under?
Hi, Bruce. Well, first of all, Bruce, I guess I'm no longer special, neither is Laura or Farmer Chad, because we're now considered usual. So we're no longer special. We're the usual group. But to answer your question, and there's a myriad of answers and go with this, and I won't occupy the 1 hour. It begins with a...
Just bring that a little closer.
A little closer? How's that? That's good. In terms of building a relationship with your clients / customers and having integrity and honesty. I think most people today, you know, they're used to calling the big providers, if you will, in whatever business and being held on hold for long periods of time. So I know a lot of customers are investing a lot of advanced technologies to be responsive to their customers quickly. I think it's what people hate to be ignored. So that's a good starting point. I think, isn't that why Amazon's doing so well? They're very responsive.
Oh, yeah, they're the best with customer service.
You think so?
I just feel like if the product's wrong or, like, something happens, you just email them and they get back to you, like, we'll just ship it to you. Like, I know I got a bunch of Christmas presents shipped to me, and my apartment complex lost them. And it wasn't even from Amazon because there's different, like, sellers on there. And they're like, you know what, they gave me everything back, like, refunded me everything.
Didn't it take a while? Like, I remember this is only going back a couple of years. We ordered something from Amazon, and it took months to get just a $30.
Well, it could be the seller, maybe.
Well, that's the thing. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Is Amazon Marketplace is a lot of different sellers,
right.
And I mean, it's you guys talked about Amazon as the best, and I mean, I'd almost never shop there again. That was my experience. But
here's a classic one. How about Zappos? You ever buy shoes on Zappos?
I have not.
You get them like the next
day. But that was a lighter.
Yeah, no, that's Zippos. But Zappos, you go on Zappos and you order your shoes or you know whatever. They're there the next day, the day after that.
Yep. Usually the next day.
No, I just spent a fair amount of money ordering from Nordstrom, which you would think, and I've been waiting like a week and a half. So my expectations are now that for customer care is that that they're responsive to me, like Zappos. You know, again, you order shoes, they're there within 48 hours. Now I'm having to wait a week and a half, completely unacceptable. By the way, 5 years ago, a week and a half would have been great.
Bruce, you brought up a good point. So I have a good experience with Amazon, so I would shop there again. But you had a bad one, so now you won't. So that just goes to show you that, you know, some customers have bad experience. It doesn't mean the company's terrible if one customer has a bad experience. It just means your circumstance, you know, might have been one in a, you know, 100, whatever.
Well, and how do you build processes to protect against bad experiences that can be more prevalent than good experiences?
Well, I think the internet world, specifically, you know, the Amazons or the Zappos or, you know, ones that don't have the quote-unquote brick-and-mortar stores, tend to lean more towards the customer is always right type of scenario. So, you know, Laura's experience of, hey, these were shipped and my complex lost them or somebody took them off my doorstep and Amazon, you know, okay, that's fine, we'll reship this stuff out to you immediately, versus a brick-and-mortar store, I mean, from what I'm seeing, a Nordstrom's that, you know, that you place an order for online, they'd much rather direct you to the store. For example, my experience recently was Banana Republic had a big sale. I went online to get some shirts and that type of thing, and they said, you know, instead of us shipping them to you, why don't you just reserve them at your local store? Here's your local store. They have everything in stock. You can pick it up today or tomorrow.
Right. Mm-hmm. Is that more convenient or less convenient?
In some cases, it's more convenient if I'm nearby or out on, you know, planning on being out. But otherwise, I just have it shipped to my house.
So those are stores. So translate that to technology, right, and telecom. I mean, even though this show is not solely about telecom, but in the telecommunications world, if we were to ship, we meaning NetCarrier, and I'm including the collective group in the we. So NetCarrier ships a phone or a group of phones out to a customer, 10 phones, mm-hmm. out to a customer in Wisconsin. That customer loses those phones, or the shipment never quite makes it there. What's going to happen? Is the customer always right, or is NetCarrier just going to reship 10 more phones and hope that they get it the next time? That doesn't always play out well. It's not always possible because, you know, it's a lot different when Amazon might be able to absorb a $30
right. They're a huge right.
item.
Mm-hmm.
But in a company like a NetCarrier, who is, a you know, on the larger side of the SMB but still in that SMB mode, they can't always absorb a transaction like that. So how do you keep that customer happy? Let's say that situation plays out. 10 phones shipped to Wisconsin. Those phones get lost. Customers saying, I want my phone service, and by the way, I'm not paying you $2,000 for those phones that they're going to say you lost.
Right.
What happens?
Depends on, as you know, my wife has a shipping business. So it depends on the level of care that you instituted to ship the product. So, for example, if you use UPS and you had guaranteed contracts, et cetera, so, you know, that would be guaranteed versus, you know, you use, you know, Laura's shipping company and they may or may not deliver. So it's a level of care that can be explained to a client whether or not who has responsibility and liability.
Yeah, I mean, my initial response to that is, okay, typically we'll send FedEx or UPS. You've got a tracking number. They've lost the items. So in the meantime, we as NetCarrier are processing a claim for those lost items. But, you know, for the sake of the customer, we're repackaging, reshipping those 10 phones back out there again, and or we're using a local, you know, a local vendor in Wisconsin that's one of our preferred partners or something like that to say, hey, you know what? we're going to drop ship these to you, or go out and get these phones and have them there tomorrow type of thing. We're working on a scenario that's going to resolve the customer's pain immediately or as close to immediately as possible, while we on the backside of things are taking care of resolving the lost shipment.
So I just found this, you know how I love my articles.
Yeah.
So on mindtools.com.
Mindtools.com.
Yeah, so it has 7 steps for dealing with unhappy customers.
Yes.
So, all right, step one is adjust your mindset. So get into, you know, get away from that. It's, you know, isn't my fault. It's something the customer did. You know, get in a customer service mindset. The next one is listen actively. Repeat their concerns. Be empathetic and apologize. 5 is present a solution. 6, take action and follow up. And step 7, use the feedback.
And so, okay, one of those things that strikes me is active listening.
Mm-hmm.
So active listening, there's a lot of times where I might be on the phone, customer service with somebody overseas, and they do all of those things very, very well. Those are ingrained in their heart and soul. But I still might have a terrible experience because they can't actually do anything for me. So the people, when you call one of the satellite radio companies, I guess it's only one company now,
yeah.
they feel very bad for your situation. They're empathetic. They ask you they repeat what you said to them, making
mm-hmm.
sure they got it right in your language.
Yeah.
And then they still can't resolve your problem. So you're still a very, very...
Well, then they don't do step 5.
Find a solution. So, but they try. They try, but they can't. What if your solution is... So what if the solution is I want to cancel the service because I found a better price, but I'm under contract with your service, and you can't provide me this service that is cheaper. So what happens then?
Well, by the way, you just said the magic word, contract. So, you know, if you want to call Verizon Wireless and cancel your cell phone service, they're going to point back to your contract. So that's the starting point of all conversations. If it comes down to a cancel, that's usually a challenge. Everybody has contracts, and first and foremost, that's where people will point to. So that's effective negotiation of your contract's critical.
So in terms of, so you're now in a product, you're halfway through, something changes with technology halfway through the contract. Let's say you signed a 3-year contract for some type of technology. Maybe it's a cell phone. Right, you bought a cell phone, and you're in a 3-year contract with the provider. 2 years is typical, right?
Yeah, 2 years.
So a year from now, you got a great deal on a phone. The next phone comes out, and you critically need some features on that phone for what you do in business, Al. What are you going to do? So you're going to go back to that carrier, and that carrier is probably going to say, well, you know, listen, you're in a contract, live with the contract, and you're probably thinking in your mind, well, you know what? As soon as my contract ends, no matter what happens now, I'm going somewhere else because I don't like the fact that they weren't flexible. They didn't find a solution to
right.
the problem. They didn't live by number 5. So what happens? There's a contract, but what happens?
But I mean, I don't know. In that scenario, I would, if you know, I don't know. It also goes back on the customer, too. I mean, you don't have to be a jerk about it. What, just because they couldn't find a solution? But
I'm a jerk all the time.
Just because you want a new, you know, new technology and they can't provide it, you're just going to up and leave them, and they're not supposed to charge you for, you know, leaving. Some customers will be like, well, screw you, I'm going to badmouth you and all this because I wouldn't let you out of contract because you wanted, you know, the best technology. But I mean, they're running a business. Everyone's running a business. You can't be a jerk off.
So is that?
Well, I mean, if a company is really
Thank
trying,
thank God we're not bound by the FCC.
Is that a technical term?
That's a Philadelphia term.
I kept it pretty, you know,
jerk.
Low key. But
so
I mean,
it's a jerk who's feeling a little off.
If a company is really trying
mm-hmm.
and really is listening to me and really trying to come up with a solution and be, you know, very apologetic and nice and really working something out, then I'm going to be okay. I may still leave, but I'm not going to go badmouth them or whatever, as long as they're making an effort.
All right,
I feel
so,
like.
So if the answer is, so if the customer calls up, right, if you're the customer, you call up, you're in this situation, you desperately need that phone, but they say, I'm sorry, we just can't do it because it's not financially feasible. And and they tell you, now, in 6 months or in 8 months, we could probably make it work, but we just can't do it right now. You're okay with that?
Yeah.
If they say, well, hey, I'm sorry, you signed a contract, live with the contract.
I'd be upset, because I'd be like, well, why aren't you going to at least acknowledge what, you know, what's going on, or at least tell me, hey, we don't have that now, but in 6 months, guess what, we are rolling that out, and maybe when that time comes, we can offer you a special promotion because, you know, you were one of the customers that recommended this new feature, something like that. I mean,
better than live with the contract, jerk off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
Wow. Heavy duty. Look, it's how the message is delivered.
Yeah.
So sometimes people will say, you know, oh, I agree with, gee, I can't believe we're doing that to you. So they actually show empathy in the wrong direction, where they're pointing against their own company, and now it's the customer's thinking, yeah, you're right, the company is, they're a bunch of jerks. If you personalize the conversation either way, that doesn't necessarily get you to the end, because, you know, if the person says, well, that's just too bad, and that's the way it is, and sometimes you get nasty people do that, and nobody wants to accept that either. So, but I think often, quite frankly, we have to do it occasionally, where you explain business terms here, you know, we have costs associated with, et cetera. I think people will listen to business explanations rather than just the strict empathy one way or the other. I think if you explain in business terms, they'll understand.
I overheard Bruce today, and, you know, dealing with a customer, and that's exactly what he did. He brought it back down to, like, business. Okay, this is what the solution is. I need this in order for us to, you know, be at where we need to be at as far as margins. What can you do to help me out? Can we work something out? And the guy was very open and was like, you know what? And I think he appreciated it. And, you know, the way he communicated it was important, and it worked out, because I think the way he approached it.
I think salespeople, a lot of times, salespeople, not management personnel, but salespeople tend to take one side of, you know, either try to give way too much and then they have to backpedal, or they take the extreme firm stance of, this is the way we do things, and, you know, go screw, you signed a contract. And the answer really is that the customer just wants to feel like they're partners with you. They didn't, to the customer, they didn't buy a product from you. They engage in a partnership to help them. I'm talking technology now.
Yep.
You're helping them through their technology for the next 3 years. You're their technology partner, right? So to maybe to you, they're a customer, but to them, you are their technology world. And that salesperson is their bridge to the technology. So I think that when salespeople sometimes get either disingenuous and they try to do too much, or they overpromise and underdeliver, that can really hurt. Or when they don't communicate, or they squash that bridge, that can really hurt as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's always finding that compromise that makes the customer happy, that makes the deal stay together and keep your margins and everything where you need to be for good business. And you know what? If the customer walks away with a good experience, even though they may have lost the war, to use that phrase, they're still going to talk positively about the experience,
right,
hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Laura, you hinted to that a little earlier, you know, hey, you know what, if you explain to me, Mr. Cell Carrier, that I can get this phone in 6 months and you're going to do something special for me because I was the one that brought this to your attention or whatever to make me feel good about it,
yeah,
then I'll wait that 6 months then most times and go ahead and take advantage of that when it comes around.
Yeah, instead of treating them just like a customer and trying to do everything they want, treat them like a partner, and you're in this together. They have a business, you have a business. You both need to be protecting your own businesses. So have a discussion about it, you know, calmly, rationally, and come up with a solution together, not like the customer saying, well, this is what I want, and you're like, okay or no. When the fact is, I mean, you got to be realistic with the solution that you're coming up with.
Well, that's on a business-to-business level. On a business to residential, it's mass marketing, it's mass numbers. So again, people want a genuine dialogue. Let me give you an example. I buy a computer from Best Buy, and I had the Geek Squad do all this work, and I won't go through the horror story, but they did a horrendous job. So they send me a customer service survey. I complete that survey, and I gave them very, very low marks and had comments and because I was really annoyed at the job they did.
Nothing happened, right?
Absolutely nothing happened. And so that actually pissed me off even more because I said, that was so disingenuous. If you really – in other words, I would have expected that someone from Best Buy would have seen my response and go home. Maybe we can reach out and see
right.
what we can fix. They did nothing. So I realized then that their survey, which you know tries to give the impression of we care – really meant that they didn't care. It had the reverse of what they perhaps hoped for because they really had nothing in their back pocket that said, if we get a really low score or whatever, let's call the – well, first of all, if you get high scores, you call and say, hey, tell us what we did right. But if you get low scores, you call and say, hey, what did we do
not so good?
Yeah,
not a lot of companies do that at
they
all.
You
have to use the feedback.
So why then would they send me a survey, ask me to spend 5, 10 minutes,
right.
whatever it was,
they weren't gonna
filling
do
out something that really went nowhere?
It's purely for their benefit so that they could take the average of those scores and
yep,
try to make
exactly.
little decisions to increase profitability at the end. That's another story for another day. And I want to dive more into that at some point because I think that surveys and things like that are so important and that they're either over or underutilized depending on the goal of that particular company. But we do have one of the challenges associated with keeping customers is the collection of revenue, and we know that the collection of revenue starts from day one, not necessarily when you're about to shut them off. And Larry Steller is going to join us on the other side of the break from Quality Asset Recovery. And Larry has a really in-depth model to collecting revenue. Fascinating guy, excellent speaker. And we tried to have him last week, didn't work out. So Larry's going to join us today on the other side of the break to talk about collecting revenue and not damaging your customer relationship while you're doing it. If you want to line up, and again, sometimes we neglect callers in the midst of discussion, but if you want to line up and get in on the discussion, you can do so at 855-VOC-RADIO. It's toll-free. It's nationwide, and it's only when we're live. So don't call when you're listening to the podcast because you might be calling another show. 855-VOC-RADIO is the toll-free number. If you want to weigh in on the discussion specific to this program, tweet at NetCarrier and use the hashtag TakeChargeTuesday, at NetCarrier, hashtag TakeChargeTuesday. Larry Steller coming up on the other side of the break. This is Take Charge Tuesday live in the room studios located in the NetCarrier and Cloud, and we'll be back in 3 minutes.
Live from the In the Room studios located in the NetCarrier and Cloud, this is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Hey everyone, it is your favorite knockout, Mickey James, and you're listening to the VOC Nation.
It's not easy being in IT today. Data is growing exponentially, technology is changing at an accelerating pace, and the consequences of unplanned downtime are more serious than ever. StorageHype helps eliminate these risks by automating all the data protection and disaster recovery for your laptops, servers, and virtual systems through a single provider. StorageHype can help you free up more time, recover faster, and improve the reliability of your backup process. Visit StorageHype.com.
Hey guys, Grady Hicks here, Pro Wrestling Illustrated contributing writer and the host of In the Room, TheBradyHicks.com, and for the first time ever, VOCNation.com. So happy to be part of the family. Join us each and every Tuesday night, 9, 8 Central, VOCNation.com, TheBradyHicks.com, myself, DJ, Derek McDonald, Ray Bogus, Anthony Sarlo, Kathy Fitz, breaking down all that's going on in wrestling today, and so much more.
Okay, Philadelphia parents, listen up. Do you have a child in the house that's just about to learn how to drive? Well, you got to do this. You got to head over to DuncanSchoolOfDriving.com. Best of Bucks County 2013, as voted by the Courier Times, Duncan School of Driving, specialist in teenage driver training. Keep that insurance down. Keep them accident-free. 215-639-1990. They're endorsed by the Pennsylvania Police Officers Association, the Duncan School of Driving, DuncanSchoolOfDriving.com.
Business owners, prepare to take charge. Get the latest trends in business and technology every Tuesday at 12 p.m. Eastern, presented by Netcarrier. Tweet your business questions in advance at Netcarrier using the hashtag TakeChargeTuesday. Or call live toll-free at 855-VOC-RADIO.
Hey, I'm the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart, telling you fans worldwide to visit VOCNation.com. VOC Nation gives you top-notch interviews with the hottest guests, the latest news, and lots of fun from the greatest team headed by the voice of choice. Hey, take it from me, the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart. VOCNation.com is the place to go, baby.
Are you getting lost in the cloud? Is technology moving too fast for you? Find your way at netcarrier.com. Ride the NCloud and soar above your competition.
This is Buggy Nova, your Candyland princess, and I want everyone to know that I love VOCNation.com.
Hey, how's it going? This is Amy Dumas, but you may know me as Lita. You're listening to the VOC Nation.
Take Charge Tuesday, worldwide in the VOC Nation Radio Network. Heard at VOCNation.com. Also simulcast at netcarrier.com. We're broadcasting live in the Netcarrier NCloud, and you can actually get your business into the NCloud by going to netcarrier.com. Talking today about customer relationships and keeping customers long after contracts expire. And one of the biggest things that you can do to keep a customer relationship tight is to manage the collection of the revenue. And a lot of times, I think service providers and really any business, they'll attempt to collect revenue the old-fashioned mafia way, Chad, where they say, do this or else, pay this or else, I will shut you off. And I met a guy a couple weeks ago. His name's Larry Steller from Quality Asset Recovery. And they have such a progressive approach, I think, to collections. And I invited him to be part of the discussion today. And I am going to bring Larry in the room right now on Take Charge Tuesday to talk about his approach to collections. Larry, you have an entire system, do you not?
Absolutely. You can't do anything without a plan, Bruce.
You can't do anything without a plan. Thanks for joining us. And your plan just fascinated me. We got to talk for we planned on talking for 15 minutes, and we ended up talking for 90 minutes. And I just wanted you to spend some time today talking to the people out there about your business, maybe how you can help other businesses out there to improve their collections, and just how you got started. How did you get started with Quality Asset Recovery and implementing some of your ideas?
Well, Bruce, as you know, I really believe you don't do anything without a plan. QAR was a plan that started in the 80s and finally got done with the planning stages in 2000. Opened the company in 2003 and been after it ever since. You know, I feel like you just got to learn what you want to do and learn it very well. In fact, learn it better than anybody else, and you will be better than anybody else.
Yeah, that's so true. And there's a lot of people out there that go into business, Larry, and I'm sure you've seen this, where they go into business, they have a product, and they just want to shove that product down everybody's throat. And maybe the product is great, but there's no plan on how to market that product, how to collect the revenue from the customers you get from that product. Because, Larry, there's so many customers, there's so many businesses out there that sell to customers that maybe never have any intent on paying or paying on time, right? And you help to bridge that gap, to bring in that money, and you do so without the old, what I call the mafia technique of pay or else. We'll break your legs. We'll cut you off.
Yeah, I've been in medical recovery for a long, long time, and medical recovery has always been one where you don't get to choose your customer. If they don't pay, they get the same service as those that do. So you've got to collect with respect. in order to get anywhere. And if you're not successful at collecting in that type of a manner, you're never going to be successful in collecting medical debt.
I was going to say you start the collection process. A lot of people that are trying to collect money, they wait until maybe 60 days out or 90 days out. And from these medical clients, you've learned that it has to start a lot faster, right?
Yeah, probably the most important thing I tell anybody is don't wait. Waiting teaches your customer to be late. In some businesses, waiting, sending out a piece of mail to remind them that they're late is necessary. Not usually. Sometimes it is. Well, the one thing is, it'll never be effective. The customer will learn to wait for the notice. So all you did was take somebody who was already having a problem paying on time and make them a little bit later. And every time you put it off, you just got to make the phone call. You know, it may not be you, it may be staff, but the phone call's got to get made.
So that phone call, I guess, from the first day that payment isn't there, the friendly phone call, I guess, has to start. Otherwise, you're conditioning your customer to pay you late. Is that what you're saying? I guess it's like a dog. If you teach them that they can get as far, they can eat, you know, as much of that dinner off the plate as they can before you hit them. They learn how much time they have, right?
Exactly right.
And I'm not advocating hitting animals, by the way. I'm just using an example.
Let's hope not. You know, I have a couple right here in the office.
I do love dogs.
That was good when you were here anyway. not only that, but when a customer is late, it gets you a chance as a business owner to improve your relationship. You know, what if your electric company actually acted like they cared? You know, if you were late today, they call up and say, "What's wrong? Everything okay?" You know, you teach people that, hey, you care about them. Customer lasts longer.
Absolutely. Well, isn't that a way to find customer service problems? Because a lot of people don't pay because they're unhappy with something, right? Do you uncover problems for your clients and communicate those back?
Well, all of the time. You can imagine that medical service, and in fact, I mean, that's a lot of our business. But medical service, I mean, everybody on occasion, I mean, you go into the doctor, you expect to be cured. Well, we know we don't pay for cures. They'd cost a lot more. We pay for the service.
Right.
But when they don't get cured, a lot of times they're hesitant to just pay the bill. I mean, come on, he didn't do any good for me. And you get past those things.
Yeah, I mean, you're saying, I'm looking at your mission statement, quality asset recovery. It's the client's right to expect results, and our quality collectors know how to achieve prompt payments in today's environment. It's the client's right to expect timely and accurate reporting of these results. Building relationships equals results. So you're recovery specialists, right? They're also
exactly
an extension of customer service of your client. Is that right?
Exactly right. Nobody's going to use me if what I do is cause more complaints than I do recoveries. I mean, the CEO does not want to hear that we badgered somebody into paying.
Yeah, absolutely.
Enough complaints on your own.
Sure. Sure. So talk about, so you start early, but just take me through your methodology and how you're different from other collections agencies.
Well, I guess we started different just because the fact that we felt it was necessary. Tammy Peters is my partner. She's president here, runs our operational side. She and I both worked for a Fortune 500 company before we opened our own collection agency. We felt like they might know something that small collection agencies didn't know. But we also know that small collection agencies collect a whole lot more money than large ones. So
okay,
what we wanted to do was to take the knowledge from a Fortune 500 company and apply it in an environment where you can manage it better because it's small. And that's the only reason small companies collect more. You know, it's easier to manage the people.
easier to manage the people. Larry, you're in South Jersey. Is that your scope of where you'll actually collect money? Do you have clients outside of that market as well? Or are you nationwide?
Well, I think we're licensed now in about 40 states. But to be honest with you, I don't call California and try to get them to send me accounts to collect. I'm pretty much licensed there because if you live in California but visit the Jersey coast, you may use a lot of my clients. So I need to be licensed to collect from you in California for your hospital bill when you stayed at the shore. But mostly our clients are in New Jersey. We have a lot of clients that are just outside, you know, Delaware, Pennsylvania, New York. But primarily we're a New Jersey and Philadelphia collection agency.
Hi, Larry. This is Alan Gordon. How are you today?
Perfect.
Good. Let me ask you, I'm just curious. Look, different collections have different, if you will, niche markets. Now, yours is medical billing. I'm just curious, why don't most people, why are they late in their paying their bills? Is it because they just don't want to pay? Is it because they think they were overbilled? Is it because the amount is much more than they can afford? Is it because perhaps Aetna didn't pay the bill, and so now it's coming down to collections, and you have to get the money? So what's the primary reason that people are delinquent and it finally gets to you that says, okay, we've been trying to collect from Bruce Wirt and we can't get the money? So you know, what's the primary reasons that you see?
I would tell you it's usually one of two. It is usually either I don't have the money right now, or it is I meant to talk to them, but they never called. I never got a chance to argue about or complain about or get this fixed. So either there's something wrong in the customer service end, or right now I don't have the cash.
Okay, so how do you, I'm just curious, how do you skillfully address the I don't have the cash?
Basically, most collection agencies are going to immediately start working out a deal. You know, when will you have the cash? Do we need to change the payment amount? Would that fix the problem? Do we need to change the date it's due? Would that fix it? Those kind of things. When you get to the larger bills, you start talking about, well, okay, you can't pay it today, but what if I took 10% off? Would you be willing to borrow the money to get it resolved if I gave you a discount? So that can help a lot of our clients. And, of course, that depends on what the client is willing to allow us to do.
So you must invest a lot from your side in training your agents, if you will, on the very skillful art of negotiation. So you're saying that negotiations is a really important part of your business?
It is the absolutely most important thing we do every day. The difference between a collection agency that has 300 collectors and one that has 20 is I can be very careful on who I select to be trained for those skills. With 300, I've pretty much got to take any collector that walks in the door. So it gives a smaller agency an advantage over the larger one because you can keep them all at a high level of negotiating skills.
Well, that's interesting. So if I can ask you, okay, so you now have 10 people come in and say, you know, you understand you have a position open, and how do you find the, you know, because quite frankly, we recruit salespeople, and a big part of their job is effective negotiations. How do you find the effective negotiator that comes to you who's not only skilled, but they're tactful, they represent, look, you know, if they say something bad, it represents you, and it certainly represents your clients, so that, you know, they can't be hurtful because you'll lose your contracts. How do you find the effective negotiator that's coming into you?
It's basically an interviewing skill. Understand there's a huge difference between the salesperson and the collector. The salesperson has to be able to work without close supervision, whereas my collector is going to be in an office where somebody's looking at him all the time.
Oh,
so
okay.
There's a difference there that makes it harder to hire a salesperson with the right negotiating skills. I mean, again, the negotiating skills are something you can only find out in a face-to-face interview. But boy, the difference in the ability to accept that responsibility and handle it well, so much more important for the salesman.
So you run a tight metrics in terms of the latitude you give them and what they're – in other words, the skillful person makes it look like a conversation, but you have tight metrics around their ability to negotiate out. They can't just say it's 10%. You have a tight – you set up – and I guess that's part of your business model. You set up a tight metrics as to what can and can't be negotiated and when and where?
Well, I have about 300 clients, and every client has their own ability to set, okay, well, I'll allow you 10% of a settlement. If it goes beyond that, then you need to call me first, or they might say 20%, or these bills might be old, and they'll say, you know, I don't care if you take half of it off. Just get some money.
Right.
So they have to be able to step from one client to another, understand the rules, and quickly handle a conversation. A collector is able to handle, well, a professional collector is probably handling 100-150 calls a day, whereas if a salesperson tried to do that, they'd be gone, and they would have a problem.
Yeah, they would have a tough time. We definitely know that they'd have a tough time managing that multitasking. Larry, let me ask you real quick. I know that we're short on time and we're late for a break. But quickly, you said you staying small is important to you. Do you turn down clients that might not fit the mold that you're looking for in a customer?
I do, but I'm not sure I want everybody to know that. yes, you have to at times. If a client is taking it personally that somebody hasn't paid them, I don't want that account. I'm not the right collection agency for that. You know, we're about getting money in, and we're about keeping customers. If you're mad at somebody, you don't want them back, and you don't care how I treat them, you're not a good client for me.
Very good. Well said. And certainly very insightful, Larry. QARcollect.com is the website for Quality Asset Recovery, located over there in Gibbsboro, New Jersey, 856-925-1010, or toll-free at 866-768-0034. Again, QARcollect.com. Larry, thanks so much for being a part of Take Charge Tuesday and giving us some insight into the best practices in collections.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. No problem. Thank you, Larry, and you have a great rest of your day. Larry Steller from Quality Asset Recovery. Chad, certainly one of the biggest things in terms of managing customer relationship is managing not bad debt, but debt in general.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that you have to do is as a salesperson out there, you have to set the expectation on those initial calls that, hey, you know what? On the our billing cycle is X, you know, specifically in the technology world or the world that we deal in here with NetCarrier. You know, bills are generated on the first of every month. Your billing cycle starts on the first and ends on the 30th, and you know, setting that expectation ahead of time and knowing that, hey, you know what, my bill is going to be due, what, the 15th of every month. We're going to, you know, that I have to make sure that bill is paid. Is a key part, I think, of the whole sales process and getting that customer to understand that if we're providing services, we need to get paid for those services, just like they do in their business and just like any business does. And part of that partnership that you mentioned earlier in the show here is just that. You know, there's going to be monies that exchange hands in order to provide those services.
Now, do salespeople not set the proper expectations? Is that part of the collections?
Yeah, salespeople inherently don't like to talk the, quote, bad news. You know, you're going to have to pass credit. You're going to have to pay your bills on time. So
I think is your switch off?
How's that? Is that working?
Yeah.
All right, there we go.
Hey. He turned it off on purpose.
No, salespeople tend to... quite frankly, avoid bad conversations, at least the less skilled do. And so they'll avoid conversations about, you know, credit checks and, you know, paying your bills on time. So that's part of the problem, Bruce, is you're right. It's managing expectations, having everyone understand here's what we're doing, here's what you're doing. Together we have a good partnership. I think they just try to gloss over with here's the happy news, and that can bounce back on your face often. And, again, that's typically your less sophisticated sales representatives do that.
Laura, is it tough for you? I mean, you talk to partners and customers a lot. Is it tough for you in your position, a net carrier, to deliver bad news? I like to deliver bad news, but I'm a jerk. Is it tough for you to deliver bad news?
No. I mean, I take the approach kind of like you do, well, that you did earlier, not that you're a jerk, but you were the way you communicated was very calm, and, you know, you were able to talk to them as a partner, not necessarily just a customer. No, I don't have a problem because, you know, we have processes and procedures that we have to follow in order to make sure our business operates properly. So I have no problem telling someone, like, look, I'm sorry this happened, but this is how it is. Now let's see what we can do to fix it and move on. I'm not, you know, I don't like skirting around the issue, and I like to be honest and try to come up with a solution rather than, you know, lie about it or not give the bad news, because you're not solving anything. So,
and guys, I've always, you know, from the day that I started my professional career, I've always tried to go into every situation, customer interaction, thinking about the company, not just my next paycheck. And I think, you know, in the sales world, sometimes we're so short-sighted on the next paycheck that we don't think about the health of the company that we're actually working for. And that works maybe in a contract scenario where you're just looking for the next job or the next thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, people that want careers, I think they have to think about doing things that are right for the health of the company, even if that means reevaluating goals. Because sometimes companies put out goals that aren't realistic. And, you know, in my career, certainly I've gone to, you know, my superiors many times and said, hey, listen, I know what you want to do, but here's what's realistic, here's what's possible. And sometimes if a salesperson does that, they can tell a good story and they can affect change. Some salespeople are, maybe they're afraid to do that, but they don't look at things in terms of business and what is possible. And if they do tell that story of this isn't possible, they don't necessarily always have the right set of statistics to back them up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, a lot of times it's a selfish motivation that the reason that they're saying that. They aren't committed to achieving the goals that were set forth from them. So they come back and say, oh, those goals are unachievable or unrealistic, or, you know, that's not something that we can actually do or achieve. And in reality, if you are looking at both yourself in a sales role as well as the company, you can see, hey, the ultimate goal is to achieve X. And, you know, it was ingrained in my mind, being brought up specifically by my father. What are you willing to give up to get to where you want to be? And, you know, I think that's a...
Your soul.
Well, I don't know
the
about
devil.
That.
Whoa, that was...
You know, without turning this into a sales show, I think if salespeople realize that candor, especially on the negative side, is actually a very effective selling technique, because clients are not used to hearing open candor, especially on the negative side. And I know that when I've opened up those conversations, it actually, you start to get the positive head nods, because I think people are waiting for the candor,
mm-hmm.
Good or bad, and they absolutely and genuinely embrace it. And so it's a really effective sales tool, if you will. It's called honesty and integrity, and you should do it every time, and people expect it every time.
Aye, aye.
Or
wait, what is
amen.
It?
Amen.
Amen.
Aye.
All right,
Captain.
Take charge, Tuesday.
That was I.
Nice discussion on keeping customers and the different techniques that we use to try to make customers happy and provide good customer service in business and certainly at NetCarrier. So I want to say thanks to Alan Gordon, the Director of Sales and Marketing.
My privilege.
For NetCarrier. Chad Muckenfuss, the proprietor of Mill Creek Organic Farm, also the NetCarrier NCloud Implementation Manager, and Laura Rinker, who works with partners in various ways, shapes, and forms.
Okay. Sounds interesting.
At NetCarrier.
Occasionally uses bio language.
I meant to say here, here. I just remembered now. It wasn't I.
She said jerk, and then the off part came. She separated
later,
those words. There was a semicolon.
And
semicolon. Dash. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm the voice of choice, Bruce Wirt. And we'll be back next Tuesday here on Take Charge. Actually, we won't. We'll be...
yes.
We'll be
flying across the country.
Taking off. Yeah.
Flying across the country, doing a little checkup on our net carrier VARs, value-added reseller stuff. So in 2 weeks, we'll talk about building an effective VAR program and building an effective channel, what that means. And I'll be speaking about that out in Las Vegas in August. So we'll preview that as well. I think that's an exciting topic.
Very exciting.
For 2 weeks from today. Take Charge Tuesday worldwide. At VOCNation.com, simulcast at netcarrier.com. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks. The following program is brought to you in part by NetCarrier. For all of your business communications needs, take your business into the NCloud at netcarrier.com. The opinions and information expressed on other VOC Nation radio network programming may or may not reflect the opinions of the staff or management of NetCarrier. Sit back, relax, and enjoy insight and analysis of the business world. This is Take Charge Tuesday, presented by NetCarrier in the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Business owners, prepare to take charge. Get the latest trends in business and technology every Tuesday at 12 p.m. Eastern, presented by NetCarrier. Tweet your business questions in advance at NetCarrier using the hashtag TakeChargeTuesday. Or call live toll-free at 855-VOC-RADIO.